KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
We have in the studio coming up here members of the Kenai Performers. They are involved in various aspects of the performers, but also what is the word for when a play comes back after it's been away?
A revival.
Revival. In the
repertory.
Yeah, in the third revival of the Ballad of Kenai. I have with me Terry Zoff
Schlesler
and Mike Gallagher and Don Nickel. How are you doing?
Doing great.
The fifth?
Fifth revival.
Oh, you know, I was out there thinking it was just the third. But tell us the history of the Ballad of Kenai then. Let's start there.
The Ballad of Kenai was written by Lance Peterson. The music was done by Bob Richardson. The lyrics were done by Frank Malone, believe it or not. Very, very good show. It started out in the early 70s. Lance had done a few shows, and Jean McMaster, his mother, the dance teacher here in town in Kenai, had put on some dance recitals, and it had to do with some Kenai happenings. And Lance finally tied it all together in the mid-70s, and he made a two-act play with almost 80 people involved, and we put it on in the old mall in Kenai. It used to be a theater there, a movie theater. And we put it on there, and it was quite a show. A very, very good show. And later on, in early 80s, in 81, Lance decided to make it into a competition show, which is sponsored by ACT Fest, which is a national organization. And it's a competition held every 2 years. It's a 60-minute show. You have to have everything done in 60 minutes. And so he truncated a lot of this show. We knocked it down to 40 people instead of 80. Most of us had two parts. Some of us had three. And so he came up with this, and we put this together in the early part of 1981, took it to the state competition in Southeast, and we won the state, and the next night we won the regional against Spokane, and we were one of nine organizations in the country to go to the nationals in Kalamazoo, Michigan in June. So in order to pay for this, we started taking it around the country, around the state. We took it to the Anchorage area, the Sydney Lawrence. We put that on a couple times. We had 2,500 people each time. And so we came to the Kenai Peninsula with it, of course, and we made a couple bucks. Well, at that time, the state had a lot of money, so it gave us the money, too. So we were able to fly 40 people to Kalamazoo, and we put the show on, and we sat out in front of the theater doing lines and tightening and tightening and tightening and tightening. We got it down to 57 and a half minutes. And we put it on, and there, like I say, there was eight other groups there. We were the only one to get a standing ovation from our peers. Now, we did not win, but the three judges, two were from New York City, one was from New London, Ontario, Canada, and they were all urban folk. And the first judge got up and said, "You exaggerated all your characters." And 40 people fell on the floor laughing because they didn't realize that these characters had come from real Kenai people, and we had to understate every one of them. And so he couldn't understand this. So we did not win, but I felt we did a good job, got a standing ovation, and it was a wonderful time.
Wow. I read a review of it in Jenny's newspaper, the Readout Reporter. There was a story in it, had historical photographs and such. And I got to be honest. At first, I thought it was the Battle of Kenai. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there was a Battle of Kenai.
That's very
here.
Close.
The Russians and the Dena here. And it wasn't until this morning I thought it was the Ballad of Kenai. What's the storyline? What's the plot? Somebody want to comment on that?
The way that Phil Morin, who I think was also in the original production, he has brought it back, though. And Phil has said that he set it up so that against the backdrop of Readout and the earth and the wind and the sky. And Mike Gallagher can talk to you about the backdrop because he painted it and it's absolutely enormous and covers the entire back of the stage. And then there's the natural world of the Dena'ina who were originally here. And then on stage is Don Nichols representing the grandfather and the early Russian influence and their continued influence on the area. And also on stage is the five-piece orchestra that plays music for us. And then on the floor level with the rest of the audience, right there with the audience, is Kenai Joe's Bar, which is the local meeting place for the early homesteaders. It also is the site of where a lot of the early council meetings, I mean, the Kenai Council met there. I mean, it was the place. And so with all of those three layers of worlds, you have the idea of what is the effect of progress on an area set against the backdrop of things that are constant and go on forever and things that change.
I understand it. It even looks into the future.
I think it allows the audience to figure out what happens in the future. But it basically, for the purposes of the play, it starts in the early homestead days. That's the past. But it also goes farther back to what is the past for the Dena'ina people. And then the future is actually probably early days of the pipeline. It's about the 1972 is about what modern times is in this particular play.
Wow. Mike, you want to tell us about that that big backdrop?
Well, I think you guys overstated it a little bit.
Well, no good deed goes unpunished. He started painting on Shrek, and now look what he's doing.
Yeah, and we can't forget Rita is, you know.
Oh, of course.
She's the guru in that. One thing I would like to kind of bring up, and this play has developed over a number of years, and it's changed and shifted. I think in one of the originals, we actually did go into the future. There was jets or spaceships or something. One of the things that's changed this year that I think that we really need to is we're very fortunate to have Bunny Swan working with us and helping us with the dialect of the Dena'ina people and with the dance and the customs. And I think that's really added a lot to the show. It's truly giving us some historical feel for the area. And Phil, of course, is a brilliant director, and he's been able to incorporate that with the Russian influence so that we get a real taste of what happened historically here. So I think that's – and what we're talking about is backdrop. It's a painting of Readout. What is
the size of it? It's not just a painting. What is the actual dimension of that
painting?
I don't
know. It's 40 by 35 or something. I don't know.
It's absolutely enormous, feet? And he's painted it.
30 by 45 feet.
Yeah, it's pretty big size.
When it's hung against the backdrop, I think it's going to weigh about 500 pounds.
Okay,
it is enormous because it's built on those giant 4 by 8 flats.
Right. So before we get too far, where and when is this latest production or revival going to play?
It's going to be at KCHS. I believe it's the second weekend in November.
Right.
And I think we're running three nights.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I guess we're going two on Saturday.
Yeah, we're going. Yeah, we're doing a matinee and an evening performance on Saturday.
And of course, we'll have the big yellow signs out all over the country. So we'll and phone numbers so that people can call and get their tickets. And,
so, do we have 40 people in this production or 80?
It's closer to 40.
Closer to 40 in this particular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, is it the version then that went to the competitions?
No, it's changed.
Oh, okay.
It's changed. It changes every time we put it on.
I was just going to ask that because Mike said something about right.
The first one in the competition, we started out on a rocket ship. That's not in this show.
And Philip has gone down to Homer and talked with Lance Peterson. And so any developments that we've had in this particular show, Lance is giving his blessings and kind of helped along with any changes in it. And we sure don't want to forget him. He was such a huge part of our artistic community here, Lance Peterson.
And I think that Bob Richardson, he's
going to be here.
He's coming here
to
direct it. Right. To conduct the show.
Oh, wow.
And then in the early 60s, when Lance first conceived this, Peter Kalifornsky gave some of the stories and some of the language to him. And so that is, as they pointed out, was updated by Bunny Swan and her brother. And they have been so generous with their time to help make sure that we have this historically correct. Because in the early versions, the local people are referred to as Knightsy, which, as we found out, that's actually the Russian word for them. And they went by the good people, or they went by Denina. And so we've tried to reflect some of that. And we've also been lucky enough to incorporate Matt Boyle from the North Road Pounders. And I think that man plays percussion from inside his soul. I mean, it is as natural to him as his heart beating. And we are lucky to have him as this thread that goes through of this heartbeat of all of the people involved.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I have heard him and the North Road Pounders play. They're incredible.
I don't know how anyone can sit still when you hear drums. I just think they're amazing.
This show should actually be called The Ballad of Alaska, because it reflects so many things that have happened throughout the state of Alaska in many of these villages and small towns. And so it's almost a hallowed show. As far as I'm concerned, it should be taken all over the state and shown.
You know, and Alan Boris, one of the professors out at the college, I believe he is actually an anthropologist, he has made the statement that this is one of the best historical documents that's come out of Alaska.
And Phil has piggybacked on that. I mean, he's brought in not only experts like Alan Boris, but we were lucky enough to have some input from Joel Isaac, who is getting a PhD in some of the of Native traditions as well, and is a phenomenal local artist. But the whole thing revolves around, what does change mean? Long term, short term, what are the effects of change on people? And progress is not always a positive thing.
Progress, oh yes, progress. City laws and regulations, meetings and manipulations.
Progress. Progress,
oh yes, progress.
Progress.
This is awesome. Oh, this is terrific. I was going to ask. So this is a musical?
This is a definite musical.
I think Phil said it's a show with music.
It is, I think, yeah. It does have definite has music. It has jazz music. It has native sounds, and it has all kinds of
country harmonies.
It's
got country music.
It does. It's got everything you could find at Kenai Joe's.
I found that interesting that it was at Kenai Joe's, and then the other things you said about how Kenai Joe's was kind of a focal point back in the early days. Any bar fights in the play?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, wait, really?
You can't have Kenai Joe's without a bar fight.
I didn't want to say that specifically.
I do think I'm the only one in the cast that actually was involved with one of those for real.
Well, I have to say, I've actually never been in Kenai Joe's. We've deferred to Mike several times for his expertise.
Ah. First, well, I have to admit that I won a limbo contest in Kenai Joe's. Believe it or not, they ran a 15-year-old girl against me. When I beat her, I went down to 18 inches.
Holy cow.
You are limber and balanced.
I think that was back in the day, Doc.
It was definitely back in the day. It was back in the 80s.
Yeah. First time I ever went into Kenai Joe's, You know, I got some peanuts because they have peanuts there, and I didn't know where to put the shells. And it was my eyes were still adjusted to the outside because it's kind of dark in there. I didn't notice that they were on the floor, and the I was stacking them in a napkin. You know, I was trying to be neat, and the bartender came over. Those belong on the floor. I looked down.
Well, one of my favorite Kenai Joe stories is, I don't know if any of you know Hobo Jim Vargas or not.
Hell yeah.
But I first met Jim in Kenai Joe's. And it's the middle of the winter in the mid-70s. And this of course, we all have wore long hair back in those days. And this fellow walks in. He's got this big head of hair. And he looks around the bar, and he walks up to me. He goes, "You look pretty tough." I said, "Well, you know, I take care of myself." He says, "Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go out and fist fight, and whoever wins buys the other guy a drink." I said, "I don't know him, man, but I'll buy him one."
That was Hobo Jim.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, that a very similar storyline is in Ballad of Kenai.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, tell me more about the interaction between the past and the present, I guess, is what we're looking at for this version of the play. What are the interaction between the people? Are they separate stories, like Act 1 is the old days and Act 2 is current? Or
there's a lot of flashbacks. It starts out... I and little Alex are the only present-day people on stage. Everything else is a flashback from grandfather, the grandfather Joe's mind. And so you get the Russian influence, you get the native influence, and so you get these pieces of dancing and music and whatnot and drama, and we piece it together, and it really works good. It's really nice.
It really does, and we were so lucky. The Bunny Swan and Joel Isaac and the local Dena'ina elders pointed us in the direction of a young man named Corin Cooper, and he's never done a show before. And he plays the role of Robert, and Robert is a young Native man. And when he is in Kenai Joe's, he's mostly an observer. He's there physically in the bar, but he's watching these people. But it's interesting, if you watch it, the inside scoop is you'll notice he's the only character that moves between all the different worlds. He is the only one who physically goes between the surrounding Native world of the earth, wind, and sky and his people, and then is sitting next to the jukebox in Kenai Joe's. And so he's kind of the pivotal role. And this is a kid who's never done a show. And every time I see him, he gets better. He is phenomenally talented.
What a voice. What a singer. I was amazed with some of the notes he was able to hit.
And he has the longest song I think I've ever heard in a musical. The story of Raven and how he creates Talking Woman and then a man. So she'll stop talking to Raven, basically. He's tired of listening to her. But how man and woman are created, and it's got 9 verses that he's responsible for, singing and dancing.
Wow.
And the rest of us are just off stage, you know, we're singing into microphones to back him up. And then on stage, the dancers are interpreting what's going on. It is an amazing song, and he's an amazingly talented actor.
It sounds like you have the set is... Or on stage, there's like 2 sets facing each other or at an angle? There's like old time and...
It's actually in layers. The homesteaders are on the ground floor with the audience in Kenai Joe's bar. And then on stage is Don Nichols as the grandfather with his grandson telling him bedtime stories. And then up on a platform is the entire the thing that's been here forever, Mount Readout and the sky and everything that represents the natural world that we're all a part of.
And that area that you're talking about, that when we looked at Readout, what we did is Philip went down to the original Dena'ina camp down on Kay Beach, and he said, okay, this is where we want to view Readout from. So we try to design that and in the painting and the way we've set the setup. As you look into the lights will follow, it'll look like what the original camp would look like if you were looking out over the inlet.
And how many times did you repaint that till you got it right for Phil?
Oh, just once.
I mean, it had to be the right angle. It had to be exactly the way Readout looks from that particular site.
Oh, sure. Sure. Who plays your grandson that you're telling bedtime stories?
Young fellow by the name of Jackson Hooper. Mm-hmm. Talented young man, 10 years old.
He You'll came like to him. The very first rehearsal and knew all his lines. Wow. He made the rest of us look like, you need to catch up.
What about singing? Does he do some singing as well? How about you?
I don't sing this time. I think they looked back and said, I think we won't let him sing this time.
Doc's a good singer. Don't let him kid you.
That isn't true, because that's actually how I met him, is that way back in the day in the 80s, we were doing a production of Annie, and our Rooster Cogburn, the actor playing him, left town unexpectedly, and Gordon Griffin called Don, and he came in. I think you learned the show in like a week and a half?
No, it was 3 days. He called me on a Tuesday, and we put the show on, I think, on Thursday.
He learned an entire show in 48 hours and saved the show.
Wow. Which character were you? Were you Daddy Warbucks?
He was Rooster Cogburn.
Rooster Cogburn.
He's Miss Hannigan.
No, he's the protagonist or antagonist's brother. And
he's Miss Hannigan's brother, and they're trying to rip off Daddy Warbucks and Annie and everything.
Oh, I didn't know there was a character named Rooster Cogburn in it.
No, no, he isn't. Oh. It's just Rooster.
It's just
Rooster. Cogburn.
Oh, Rooster Cogburn. I'm sorry.
That was John
I went John Wayne.
Wayne.
I went John Wayne on you. His name is Rooster, and it's Miss Hannigan's brother.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so we had to sing a duet together and do some lines and whatnot. And so it was. Yeah, Gordon called me up, and he said, I got a problem. He said, my guy left. He said, could you come down? I said, okay, this is a Tuesday night. And I said, when does this go on? He says, dress rehearsal's Thursday. I said, I've never seen this show. I don't have a clue.
You'd never seen it? I mean, you came in like you knew everything.
Never seen
I am
it.
So impressed.
And so I had to learn some songs and some lines, and worked out pretty good.
Doc's famous for fake it until you make it, I think.
Well, he faked it to the point I thought that he had done the role before. So
wow.
I didn't know that part of the story.
Okay, I know this is I'm diverging here, but who played Annie?
Stephanie Bouchard.
Oh, she's a wonderful singer.
That's how long ago it was, though. She was a little girl.
Wow.
And I think Cliff played Daddy Warbucks, her father.
I think you're right.
Oh. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You know, if she's listening, you just made her sound old.
She's not old. She's younger than all of us.
Boy, I tell you what, she sure
she's
is.
Still younger than the rest of us.
I believe she just is old enough to finally order a drink legally.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see. I want to mention, are you folks interested in taking phone calls in case somebody's got a question? 283-8414. If you call that number, you're coming straight into the control room here, so you don't have to worry about us soliciting funds for your memberships. I should mention that, too. We are in day one of KDLL's fall membership drive, and if you'd like to join us in being a member, 283-8433 is the number, which is not on the wall here. That's why you see me looking all around. It's like, where's the number? Where's the number? 8433 is the number for calling in and pledging. But if you'd like to call in and talk with our friends from the Kenai Performers here, it is 283-8414. Easy to get confused because, for me, I guess. So please give us a call if you have questions. What else about this performance is different than the past? Besides, the few changes, different cast. Is there anything else that's different substantially in its substance?
As Terry stated, I think there's more of an emphasis on the local Denaina. This is what has been brought forward, I think, more than we had before. Because we've learned more, okay? And so getting Bunny involved was really important simply because she has been involved in that, in being a native young lady. And so she's helped us with the dance and the songs and that sort of thing. So it's been building. So that aspect of it has changed. So as we go along, this is a learning process. It's a changing process, just like Kenai has changed. And we take a different emphasis, perhaps. But when we were doing our show, there's only so much you can put in. This time it's a two-act show, and it's a somewhat longer. They've added some music to it. Some of it has come back. that had been taken out. Some of it is new. And so I think the folks are going to really be surprised. This is a good show.
And we have Rosemary Bird, who has been trying to coordinate all of the different aspects, the new music, the old music, the orchestration for it. And they've been back and forth with Bob Richardson, and he's added riffs. Some of the original was just written like, hi, improv this part. And he's actually gone back, and they've actually put a lot of this to and orchestrated it and written the music down. And that tiny little body of hers is just so much knowledge about music, and she's trying very hard to make sure that the rest of us fall in line with what was written.
If I remember at her last rehearsal, she was saying that she had just received new music from Bob and was trying to incorporate it into our rehearsal.
So. Wow. You know, that brings up a question. What you guys are talking about here is with so many versions, and it's been going on for X number of years.
Decades.
If you're a regular listener, you know that I can't do math in my head. So for decades, was it hard to gather together, you know, like you say, the music, you know, the score and the blocking and directions and I don't know why everything that you needed to keep track of from five different four previous versions. Yeah, Mike.
You know, Philip has really done a phenomenal job with this. Before he even said he was going to do the show, the first thing is he did, he went down to Homer and he talked to Lance Peterson. And he said, Lance, I want to put the show back on. Lance was very enthusiastic about it. And Philip has just taken an incredible amount of time gathering historical data, photos. I know he's gone over every one of the five shows trying to bring this show up to date. So that's pretty well fell on Philip's shoulders, and he's really done a phenomenal job on that. So it's been a challenge. One of the things we're going to try to do this year is in the auditorium, we're going to have a lot of photos up of historical people. For example, Kitty.
Oh, yes, Miss Kitty.
Kitty plays one of our local legends, and the names have been changed to protect the innocent, of course. But every one of the characters is a true character of the area, and some are a conglomeration. I play a character called Snooslip, and he's a combination of a number of people. And so, like I say, Phillips has been in charge of gathering this and collecting all this and trying to edit it down. He's really done a phenomenal job on that.
And he has not only all of that memory, and we are going to decorate the lobby, basically, with historical pictures, but he is so phenomenally talented when it comes to detail. And there are points in the play where he is, if you're watching carefully, you'll see a really quick flash of when a particular picture was taken. So he will try to set up all of us, like when we're in Kenai Joe's, and Kitty was famous for her leopard coat. She loved her leopard skin.
And her bleach blonde hair.
And it's not bleach blonde, it's natural. And so I get to meet my hair this weekend. My wig has come in. But at the same time, if you look, you'll see like flashes of there's a very famous picture of her wearing this leopard coat and turning to the bar in just a position. And he has just this flash when that picture is actually on stage, where he's recreated these historical pictures as close as he can. For a moment, it should look like it connects right to that historical document.
It's like a tableau kind of deal.
It is. It's an amazing moment. And I was like, who thinks in that kind of detail?
Philip.
Oh, man. Philip, if you're listening, give us a call. We have questions. you're talking earlier about the changes in regards to our local indigenous people, the Dena'ina. In previous versions of the play, was there heartburn on the parts of some, either natives or folks who, I don't know, sympathize with them?
I don't think we can speak for the Dena'ina people, but Peter Kalifornsky, originally, because I was lucky enough to meet him a couple of times in the 80s, the last years of his life. But he originally wrote and told these stories. And in other versions, I don't know because I wasn't in them, but Don was. They can tell you what went there. But with this one, that's one of the things that Phil spent hours and hours was talking to the local elders and seeing what kinds of things would work. Bunny has come in and corrected our pronunciation on a lot of different things. And so, I mean, as Don said, we have accumulated knowledge over the years, and we're doing our best to try to respect a culture that is different from ours and yet has been so generous in lending some of their ideas and stories and music to this version.
Sure.
I think it was very sympathetic, the shows that we've done before, particularly the competition we took to Kalamazoo. It was very sympathetic to the native ideas. We had a very talented young man, a Brent Florendo, absolutely astonishing young man. And he did such a nice job. I think that's part of the reason we got a standing ovation, because we had covered the native background so well. And this was really strange to the rest of the United States. I think they were really taken by how we had handled this the native situation and how it associated with the Russians coming in and that sort of thing. And so I think this has been built on for this show, and I'm looking forward to having folks come and see it, because it is a little bit bigger in the native situation this time.
You know, and one of the things, too, and this show, Philip was really careful in this, but he really did want to show how the native culture was modularized or set apart somewhat from us, and how the treatment was of the people, and to try to show the truth on what really was going on here. It's not sugar-coated, I don't believe. I think it tells the true story in a way that may have not been politically correct.
I think he says it shows us warts and all.
Yeah.
It does show that there was a lack of understanding of all cultures towards each other. And in this particular case, people just went about doing what they were doing without necessarily respect for other cultures. And so that's the part that's warts and all.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But it sounds like back in the day, there were there wasn't anybody who, nobody was picketing you. When you're doing this, like, this is unfair to the Dena'ina and you need to change it. It wasn't driven by that. It was driven by just the natural growth of awareness of our surrounding cultures.
I agree.
So, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's not often I figure something out on my own here. I feel pretty good. Once again, we are talking about the Ballad of Kenai. I thought it was the Battle... Because I think there's a Battle of Sitka play, and there's a play in Kodiak. Oh, I'm going to forget the name.
Cry of the Wild Ram.
That's it. Cry of the Wild Ram, which sort of deals with, Shelikov and, you know, their early interactions there as well. It sounds like you've seen these others. How do they compare?
I've never seen it.
Oh, they don't compare.
Oh, yeah.
We're just dismissing things out of hand.
Well, I'm talking with Mike Gallagher, Don Nickel, and Terry Zoff Schessler. Did I get it close?
Rhymes with wrestler. Schessler.
Oh, Schessler. Oh, okay. You know, the reason I got I stumble on it is I have a friend in Chicago who pronounces it I can't even say it.
In German, it's Schessler.
Ah.
And my last name is Zopf, and we just say Zopf Schessler. Much easier.
There you go.
A lot of us just say Terry.
That's true.
And they're all with the Kenai Performers. The Ballad of Kenai is coming up.
November 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th. That's Thursday through Sunday. So we have three evening performances and two matinees.
Wow. So a matinee on Saturday, that's what you were saying earlier, right?
Yeah, we have two shows in a row. We started that tradition with Shrek last year, and Phil liked it well enough that he incorporated it into his production.
I heard good things about having the matinees on Saturday and Sunday.
It was nice because then people can come, like, from Seward or from Homer, and they still have Sunday instead of having to get up and go to work on Monday after driving all that distance and watching a show.
Oh, yeah. What does it take to put on a production like this? Beyond the requirement of Rita's oatmeal cookies, what else is required to pull something?
The show is fueled by Rita's cookies.
What else is needed to fuel the production?
You know, one of the things I've gotten involved with is what's going on building sets and stuff, and I like to say that the magic actually happens in building the stages and making the scenes. The spotlight, that's the glory of it. But the true magic of the theater to me is that the backdrops, the stage, the lighting, the soundtracks, that to me, I've become really interested in that. And so that, and there's a crew that we have working there that goes unnamed year after year, but to me, that's been a large part of it, a real learning experience for me in the last year or so.
The time and talent is, I mean, you have to not only have the music has to be rehearsed, the dance has to be rehearsed, the lines have to be rehearsed, the vocal music has to be rehearsed over and over again so that we get the harmonies correct. But then you have these phenomenal costumers like Chris Cook, and then you have all the PR, such as what we're doing right here. You have tickets, you have posters, you have all these people building and painting and adding things and trying things on and going back and forth. And that's all before anything else is done. Before anybody sees the end results, you have all of that stuff going on backstage. It takes time and talent and money. And all of the people who work on these shows are volunteers.
Another thing is space. Which brings us to a whole other thing. Where we do our rehearsing, and we call it the pack, it's out on K Beach. We've had 2 and 3 shows being, the sets being built, rehearsals going on all the time. So just the timing of that and coordinating all that together, it can keep you pretty busy.
And moving one set aside, because we can't do both sets even for this show at the same time. We have to stop a scene, reset it, go ahead. We can't we have not been able and will not be able to do the show from start to finish in the correct order until we move to KCHS. Because there just isn't enough space. And as he's pointing out, we also were doing a murder mystery. We were rehearsing that with its set. And then we're also cross... are the two shows, the big shows that cross is Willy Wonka, which is coming up in the spring, as well as Ballad of Kenai. And all of that stuff is in this one not very large space.
Which brings up another subject, of course, is that we're trying to get our building built. And we've been chasing this for years and years. Actually, we did a show years and years ago. It was called On With the Show. And we were doing dinner theater back then. We were supposed to be a... Shakespearean group, and we're out trying to find a place. So this has been an ongoing struggle for us trying to get a building, but we're actually moving forward. Looks like we may have land available to us in Kenai. We're working real hard on going forward with the funding on this, and hopefully sometime within the next year or so we'll be able to start moving forward on getting a building large enough and designed properly so that we'll have a place to build stages while we're rehearsing. And we'll be able to handle a couple shows at a time. So we've been trying to get this building up for, ever since Don started this. And I think Philip has been really leading the way on this. And hopefully if the community backs us and can see the value that we give to the community, we are the second oldest theatrical group in the state of Alaska. We started in, 65, Don?
It was earlier than that.
Yeah.
I wasn't here.
But I think it actually incorporated.
It started in 1963 with Barefoot or Slippered, performed by Master Dance Studio and run by Gene McMaster.
Yeah. And so we've been at this for a long time, and hours of entertainment for the community. And not only that, I wasn't a troubled youth, but let's just say I was on a different path then. And Gene McMaster's and company truly helped change my life and really did get me onto a different track. And I've seen that with a number of youth in our community. And we really strive. We have youth theater now. Every summer we're training young people to come up. And so we have been an integral part of this community for a long, long time. I work on another nonprofit. It's called Growing Up on the Kenai. And we're putting a magazine out. And this year when we had our annual barbecue, the Kenai performers helped support that. And so we're combining those because we truly have been an intricate part of this community for literally decades and decades.
And if anyone would like to support us and in our quest to not only continue doing what we're doing, but one day have our own building, I was just reminded that we are still selling seasonal ads for, and we used to sell them show by show, but they've made the decision just to sell ads, and they'll appear in all programs for the Kenai performers for all of our season. And you can talk to Rebecca Gilman, and she is the one that's in charge of that. And there's still ad space left in Ballad of Kenai, which will also put you in Willy Wonka and other murder mysteries and The Crucible, all of the things that we're planning to do this season. And she's at 398-2951, or just check out KenaiPerformers.org, and you can probably find the pathway to Rebecca Gilman and get an ad and not only promote your business and your services, but also help out the Kenai performers.
You know, I think we're lucky here insofar as there's a critical mass. There's enough people to do something like this. Where I grew up, Dillingham, there was not. There was 300 people in the entire school system, and there was 800 other people in town. And so maybe there were people who had come there who were talented with, you know, some sort of theatrical thing or another, music and what have you. But there just wasn't a critical mass to put it all together, ever, you know. And then there wouldn't be an audience for it. You know, everybody would be in the play, so. Such a small town.
One name that we haven't mentioned, and I would like to bring it up real quick, is our choreographing expert, Chris Moore, Phil's wife. She's doing a phenomenal job. And I was sitting back watching as they're putting the dance together of the Raven Dance. It's mystical, is all I can tell you. It is mystical the way she's done this. It's going to be a real treat for people to see.
It really is, visually, as well as the sounds and the dialogue and the whole show. It's an amazing show.
What you were talking earlier about costuming and such. Where's all that come from? What era is, I guess, the present day people? What are you folks wearing? And then
the most modern in here would be the 72, the Pipeline. So, but we were going back to like early versions of Carhartts and hard hats. But in the late 40s, early 50s, when it's the past in this show, we're looking at the early timber industry, the early fishing industry, the highliners coming into that. So, and Chris Cook and her, all of the people who work with her, have done their very best to make sure that this is period correct and appropriate. And in their cases, they're going back to their memories as kids.
Wow. Bell bottoms, yeah, is what instantly pops in mind when you say 1972. I'm thinking, well, who's got bell bottoms?
Yeah, I lived through that era.
but then, of course, then we have to go back in time.
Yeah.
Back to the creation theme, and the little critters that are running in the forest.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, we can't tell you all the secrets of the show, but let's just say we will go back in time, and we go back to the creation story from the Dena'ina people. And it's interpreted through dance and story. And then once then some of the costumes that they got there, it's just...
The costume on Little Seagull, one of our youngest actors, she is... wait till you see the costume for Seagull and some of the other characters that are involved in those stories. They're absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
And the dancers are so beautiful that they bring their outer selves to life with the movement.
I say mystical. That's the only word I can use.
I think it's a good word.
Yeah.
And so, where's all that costuming coming from? Is it all being made from scratch?
Oh, that's one of the joys of theater. Just as Mike can say, all of the things he painted over had previous... You can go back historically through the layers of paint on a flat.
Uh-huh.
You can go back historically through costumes who are, through the amazing imaginations and really good technical skills. A lot of those things are things that we had. Some are ordered, and then they're put together in new ways. And that's... A show is never finished. It never ends. It's just abandoned. And then it is resurrected as a whole different thing down the line in another production.
Wow. You look like you're about to say something.
I was just going to say that I've done theater in a variety of places in the country, and there's more talent here than I've ever seen anywhere. I worked in El Paso. I worked in Kauai. I've worked in Illinois. There's nothing like the talent that we see here. And the reason is people come from all over. With the oil patch, they come in and they go out, and you set up for a show, and all of a sudden this talent comes up, and you're going, where in the world did this come from? And it's astonishing the amount of talent that we have here. It's the best I've ever seen.
It's truly disproportionate. There is a disproportionate amount of talent for the number of people here. And if you look at any of it, if you look at the local dance companies, if you look at Kenai Performers, if you look at the high schools, you look at Kenai Peninsula Orchestra, who often accompanies us in our musicals, those people, if you start looking at their biographies, you have people who have played in citywide, in the Philadelphia Philharmonic. They have played in...
Glenn Miller.
They have played with some amazing orchestras, and they come up here and donate their time.
Wow. One thing I'm going to jump in here, too, is we were really fortunate, like I say, that we had a foundation laid here with some very, very dedicated people that built the foundation for the Kenai Performers. Doc, you were one of them. And I remember
I saved it twice.
Well,
we were going to give the money to the high school.
You know, I remember growing up as a kid looking up to you and going, oh, he's a theater god. But truly... But folks like Doc, and I refer to you as Doc always.
That's fine.
They set this foundation, and what they did is they brought us into the fold and helped develop us as actors and singers and dancers. We never felt as though we were outsiders. Once we were brought in, we were part of the Kenai Performers, and Doc, I can't thank you enough for the groundwork that you laid.
Well, it's been a wonderful time. And like I say, you know, it was going to go down a couple times. I said, well, let's do something. Well, what do you know? I said, I have never directed anything, but we're going to do it. And so we did. It happened to be a Chapter 2 type situation, Neil Simon on one time. And then we hadn't done a musical for a long time, for 13 years, and I did Hello, Dolly. And we had no players. We had no dancers. We had no musical people. It had been a long time. And so that was kind of an interesting situation. And then from then on, the next show was Fiddler on the Roof. And, of course, that's the best show in the world. And so, you know, it's been going up since that time. And now these folks are carrying on for us old-timers. And that's what it counts, you know. I hope I don't have to save it again. not with this bunch. There's a lot of talent here.
Boy. You know, when I saw... Carol Ford's production of Fiddler on the Roof.
Amazing.
When I saw the men do the bottle dance, and I watched them rehearse, you know, and there's falling off sometimes it'd work, you know, and then I saw the play, and it was perfect. And I'm thinking, holy cow, the people here are just incredible, like you're saying.
Well, we operate on the principle of see one, do one, teach one. There you go. But these people, the whole history of passing this down, we have, like, Donna's now working with a very young actor who's 10 years old, and he's becoming part of it, and hopefully he'll grow up. We've watched, like, in the case of, like, Celia Butler and some of the other, when we've watched them since, oh my gosh, she was Wendy Darling, and now she's an attorney. So all these things come back, and people keep adding their things. And even if they only are there for a short time, they add to all of the accumulated knowledge that this group brings together.
I love those kind of stories about, you know, from the past, you know, there are connections made. And, you know, just randomly, you know, oh, I think I'll be in a play. And another person, oh, I think I'll be in a play. And a friend of mine, Senator Gary Stevens from Kodiak, was in Cry of the Wild Ram and met his future wife, who was in it too, Rita. Trying to think of her maiden name. But you know, she was native from there, and they got married. I mean, I love those kind of small-town connection stories, because what if one of them didn't want to be in the play? Boom, they just lost their soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they missed the connection.
You know, I want to throw something in this, a little off base, but you know, I want to thank KDLL. You guys have supported the Kenai Performers for as long as I can remember. And without your input, we wouldn't be able to get the word out as we've done. And so just a big thank you, and keep up the good work that you guys do, because we do really appreciate this time that you've allowed us to be here.
Your generosity in supporting all the arts. I mean, you support the fine arts, you support the visual arts, you support all of the singing and dancing and acting and everything that we do, and we couldn't do it without you either.
Well, you know, community theater and public radio, I think, have a lot in common. You know, one, you know, we never have enough money to do everything we want.
True.
So it helps to do something like that. And I appreciate you guys saying that, because, especially today, because we are in day two of our fall membership drive. And the listeners out there, if you are around and would like to, near a phone, and like to call in 283-8433, or you can go online. If you're like me and you don't want to talk to anybody, you know, after all day of talking to people, you just go online and you can get a membership to public radio. And hear great interviews like this with interesting people. See, I turned it around on you.
Well, I think we all need to support each other. And it's the idea of community. I mean, this play is about community. The people sitting here, I've all met all of you through the community that's here. And we're all listener-supported, and we're patron-supported. And we volunteer our time because we're giving the small parts we can contribute to a greater good. And I'm really proud of the work we've done. And the ability to entertain people and take them someplace else for 2 hours can never be understated. That's a truly phenomenal gift. And I'm lucky to be involved with people who make that so worthwhile.
You're going to make me all misty here. That's so touching.
I mean, really. I mean, I've worked with high school kids, and I've worked with all kinds of kids, and you never know what's going on in other people's lives. And the idea that you can take them someplace else and they can forget things that are sometimes really unhappy or unpleasant in their life and take them someplace else, you give them the gift of that time. And that's truly, it's a phenomenal gift. And that's, I think, what the arts and all of the sense of community is about.
Yeah. We have just a minute or two left here. Any final thoughts from any of you? Don?
I think it's been a wonderful time. We started a long time ago. It kept building and building and building. And in the 70s and 80s, I went from show to show to show to show. We did dinner theater, we did musicals, and like I say, there's so many people that I'm beholden to. For example, Lance Peterson. If I know anything about theater, it's because of Lance Peterson. That's just the way it is. I was just a doofus coming in, didn't know the protocol, didn't know anything, and he kind of led me down the path. And I really have to give him a tremendous amount of credit. If there's anybody in this peninsula who is important to theater, it's Lance Peterson, it's Gene McMaster, it's Phyllis Moran, Phil's mother.
And let's not forget Jean Brockle.
Jean Brockle, yes, absolutely. Music teacher, talent. She played Kitty in the national thing.
Yeah, you know, Jenny.
Talented people.
Oh, yeah. Jenny showed me the story she did, I guess, the last time this was revived, and had pictures in there. And Jean Brockle at the bar talking to the bartender in that coat you're talking about.
And Margaret Gilman is playing the role her mother played in the original production.
No kidding.
And we have the O'Reilly clan.
That's true.
Sean and Patty are both there.
Yeah.
And their mother, she played a part in the original show.
And the Malones.
Wow.
And the Malones, yeah.
Damn. Well, I want to thank you all for coming in today and talking with me. Terry Zoft Schessler.
Very good.
Right on. Mike Gallagher and Don Nickel. Thank you all for coming in today during our fun drive. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
And come see the show.
Oh, absolutely. That's the 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th of November.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.